Congratulations. You found it.
You know what time it is.
This is New York Game Day. It's 3 hours of the most informative and entertaining NFL news in the league. Now here's former NFL defensive lineman Chris Canty, former Jets GM and ESPN insider Mike Tannenbaum, and your host, Anita Marks.
Welcome in. It is New York Game Day here on 98.7 ESPN. A very, very interesting week four as we get closer to kickoff, that's for sure. No Chris Canty today. It's just Mike and I. And, of course, you. 800-919-3776. We welcome the calls, as always. Obviously, we're going to recap what's going on with the Jets. No bueno, of course. And we're going to preview what's going on with the Giants as they are on the left coast getting ready to take on the Rams. Serena Morales, a good friend of mine, used to be at ESPN, now is part of the Rams broadcast team, is going to join us at 10 a.m. To give us the latest on what's going on with the Rams. Why are they doing so well? What has been the biggest difference? We will tee that up for her, and hopefully she'll have some interesting responses for us. And, you know, same old thing. We'll have my locks of the week. We're still going to have our can or can't tee. Mike Tannenbaum is going to fill in for the big old bear loving Chris Canty. And we're still going to have Mike T's bomb of the week. So same old show. Mike, let's bring you in right away, because here's the thing. Same old show, but a very different week four than what we're used to. As we know, the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Tennessee Titans, that game has been rescheduled for week seven. Right now, as it stands, the NFL is hoping that the Kansas City Chiefs and the New England Patriots can play either Monday or Tuesday night, but there's no guarantee that that's going to happen. And now there's reports that a Saints fullback, Burton, has been tested positive last night with COVID-19. And oh, by the way, he sat next to Alvin Kamara on the plane flight to Detroit. So now all eyes on that game to see if that game is going to be played. Mike, your thoughts on how the NFL is handling this. And here's the thing. We anticipated this to happen, but dude, when it rains, it pours, right? Like to have three games all this week. It's a lot, man. It's a lot.
Yeah. Good morning, Anita. Great to be with you. And a lot to unpack there. So first of all, we got to give credit where credit's due. I think the NFL and the NFLPA has done truly a remarkable job when we think about we're basically, 25% through the season, and we've played a lot of meaningful, impactful games. So let's start with, a tip of the cap from a standpoint of you talk about thousands of players and coaches. I actually think it's a fascinating study of human nature, because there's so many players that actually now connotate behavior equals getting paid. And they've done a remarkable job, and they deserve a lot of credit. So by far, the lion's share of people's behavior, how they've comported themselves, has been outstanding. One point that we need to update from what you said earlier for our listeners is that the New Orleans Saint test came back this morning. It was retested, and apparently was a false negative, and the Saint Lion game is on as scheduled. So that's a bit of good news with all of this is that...
That is that great one, news.
Yeah, the one test that came back, just came out on social media, was it came back as a false positive, and that game is on as scheduled between the Detroit Lions and the New Orleans Saints. So that's good. And I believe moving forward, we're going to keep looking at this from a week-to-week basis, Anita. I know there is some speculation out there of should the league hit pause, let everybody get healthy, quarantine, and then maybe shift into, some hotels and some sort of like mini bubble. I think that could be on the table. I think that's in their back pocket. When you talk to people at the league and the union, they feel like going back to February, Anita, they basically negotiated two collective bargaining agreements, one for 10 years, which is what got done and everyone knows about going back to February. But they did a second one where they made all these sort of additions and changes for COVID. And I'm sure one of the things that was contemplated was we're going to go with plan A, and plan A has to be firmly etched in pencil because we don't know what's going to happen. And if and when they need to tweak it, I think we're seeing, true partnership between the league and the union. And that gives me optimism and hope that we'll get through a meaningful season this year and crown a Super Bowl champion.
It's a lot. And like I said, when it rains, it pours. And you know, and I think you're right. I think we have to commend, like, it's so interesting because the conversation leading into week four with a lot of my friends, Mike, and I'm curious, you know, if you had it as well, is, man, can you believe no COVID-19, positive reports, right? Like, can you believe no players in the NFL have come down with COVID-19? And then all of a sudden it's like week four rolls around, boom. I wonder, you know, has players gotten a little bit more relaxed because the first 3 weeks were so good? Did players kind of like not take it as, like I'm really curious what happened that all of a sudden it was like an explosion of COVID-19 on the league compared to like the first 3 weeks of not one positive test, Mike. Don't you wonder about that?
I think really, like, when you talk to people, I think it comes down to science and math. And it's science and math from a standpoint of, this is obviously an insidious virus. It's highly contagious. And at some point, there's just too many people that touch the NFL ecosystem directly and certainly indirectly, that when these players and coaches go home. Look, you know, we have two teenage kids that are now going back to school on a somewhat of a hybrid basis. And, you know, it's certainly crossed my mind that we're doing everything we can within reason. But, you know, once you put other people into the world and out there, there's going to be exposure. And just given the math, and just think about how this virus has literally spread across the globe, at some point you figure it was going to hit the NFL. But again, I think what's key is they've proactively put in good protocols to effectively compartmentalize these positive tests and to move quickly. And I think that's where we got to be focused. I think hopefully Tennessee will be the outlier. I think the key for me in the next 24 hours, Anita, is going to be what happens with the Patriots, which is losing Cam Newton obviously is hugely significant. Don't mean to minimize it, but if he's the only one that tests positive, then that's going to be a great example of the protocols actually working.
Absolutely. By the way, I want to share this article in regard to, because, you know, we're sitting here talking about how the NFL is handling, you know, COVID-19. And this is an article from Pro Football Talk. The names are known, and I'm just reading the article to you. You may have read this article already, but I think it's important that, you know, football fans out there are in the know in regard to how Roger Goodell and the NFL is handling this and how and why they're making the decisions. Because also I was on yesterday and I had a few Pittsburgh Steelers fans, Mike, who called in, who were not very happy with the fact that the game was rescheduled for a different week as opposed to the Patriots and the Kansas City Chiefs, which many feel will go off on Monday or Tuesday. But the names are known now. The names are now known as to the members of the outside advisory committee that will assist Commissioner Roger Goodell on issues relating to COVID-19 throughout the 2020 season. They are, per a source with knowledge of the situation, former NFL cornerback Champ Bailey, Isaac Bruce, former NFL wide receiver, Charlie Casserly, Tom Coughlin, how about that, Marvin Lewis, Troy Polamalu, Bill Polian, former NFL GM Rick Smith. The league decided to compile a committee of former executives, coaches, and players not currently connected to the NFL in order to avoid conflicts of interest that would apply to members of the competition committee who currently are affiliated with teams that will be affected directly or indirectly by decisions the commissioner may have to make. So I just want to share that with you just so, like, you know, so folks know, like, you know, that he's put this committee together. And I know, you know, a lot of those guys, if not all those guys on that committee. So, Mike, your thoughts on this committee and is, do you feel this is the best way for the NFL to handle decisions pertaining to COVID-19?
Absolutely. Because, you know, this is truly unprecedented. And I think who's ever crowned champion in, call it February, or even have to go into March, Anita, you want it to be a meaningful season. You want it to be one that looks like it was played as fairly as possible. We could be getting into a situation, Anita, where we're talking about, when we're coming down the stretch here for the playoffs, that, hey, you know, Tennessee, which played 14 games, will they get in versus this team that played 16? Like, that's never even been contemplated in the 100-year history of the NFL. And are we going to be looking at a winning percentage conversation? I think that's a very plausible situation, because at some point we're going to run out of weeks and bye weeks. And I think to have the bandwidth of the collective wisdom out of that group makes a ton of sense, because you want player perspective, you want coach perspective, you want front office perspective. So I think at the end of the day, everyone has to feel like, hey, is this fair? Is this intrinsically fair? And I think Rob Manfred and what MLB, given their collective circumstances, have done a really good job. You know, they went through that winning percentage formula. They expanded the playoffs. You're seeing exciting baseball. And I think that's what's going to happen here, is if this keeps going down the trends that we're seeing, we could see, again, teams, not all teams playing the same number of games.
800-919-3776 is the phone number. Again, we typically start the show talking to all Giants and Jets, this is a very unique week. And this is probably the biggest storyline heading into week four. So that's why we wanted to start off by the situation that the NFL is facing in regard to COVID-19. And again, news breaking that Mike Tannenbaum just shared with us. It looks like the Saints player that tested positive last night was a false negative. And so that Saints-Detroit Lions game looks like it is going to go as planned. Let's go on to our phone lines.
Yeah. It was a false positive and it came back negative the second time around.
Okay, so false positive,
meaning
and it came
that,
back negative the second time around.
Right,
meaning
right.
That so the player positive. Does not have COVID-19.
Correct.
And that game is going to go off as planned.
Correct.
All right, let's go to Dale. Dale, welcome in. Dale, you there? Okay. 800-919-3776. Let's do this. Let's regroup. We come back. Let's dive into the Giants and the Jets. Obviously, the Giants play today. So let's kick it off with the Giants going up against the Rams. They are on the West Coast. As we know, no Saquon Barkley. Darius Slayton's going to have a very difficult matchup against Patrick Ramsey today. So we get back. We'll dive into the Giants game. I know a number of you want to chime in. We've got a few calls. 800-919-3776. We'll also, at some point in time, of course, recap, unfortunately, what happened to the Jets on Thursday night, and talk about, more importantly, the future of the organization.
Now back to New York Game Day with Chris Canty, Mike Tannenbaum, and Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Everyone's going to be hanging on pins and needles right now for the results of further testing, because not only for the health and safety, right, but who might be available to play or who might not be available to play. If you're just going to talk about the Patriots organization, they're going to have a lot thrust at them right now over the next couple of hours. And then when it comes to on the field, let's assume that this game does get played. If you're the Patriots, you've been preparing your offense all week with Cam Newton. You have all of your offensive game plan in, understanding that Cam Newton's going to be your quarterback. Now, if it's Jarrett Stidham or Brian Hoyer, that is a vastly different offense that you're going to operate and run. And so there's a lot of off-the-field stuff that New England has to deal with, and there's a ton of on-the-field stuff as well, assuming this game goes ahead and gets played.
That is Dan Orlovsky. You could see him pretty much 3-4 days a week on NFL Live on ESPN. You know, obviously, Anita Marks, Mike Tannenbaum, and you, 800-919-3776. I know there's a number of people out there who want to chime in. We're talking about some of the top storylines heading into week four. But, Mike, we touched on this earlier when we started the show at 8 o'clock today, and that is none bigger than in regard to what's going on with COVID-19. Really quick, before we dive into other topics, you know, there is talk and momentum in regard to, as we get closer to the playoffs, that there are bubbles that will be created, very similar to what we saw in the NHL and in the NBA. What are you hearing about that logistically, financially? Do you see that happening? And if it does, at what point in time in the playoffs, and how do you envision that being created?
Yeah, absolutely, Anita. Again, all options are on the table. So the league, the union have done a great job of establishing protocols, procedures. Within reason, I think they've worked very, very well. Hasn't been perfect, but neither is this this virus. So there are some other cards the league could play, including bubbles. You know, to some extent, they've done that when you think about players and coaches can't leave their cities for bye weeks, which is a big deal because in the NFL, everyone tries to get away for the bye week, either go on scouting trips or just to get out of town because it's such a long year. And I think looking at these sort of like mini bubbles where teams could be in their, you know, team hotels for the week, maybe with some visitation from families. There'll be a lot of variables that they'll look at. And I know in talking to a lot of people in the NBA, the bubble in Orlando worked. Now, as the playoffs went on, Anita, people said it would start to get draining. Now, there were other activities for people to do there, but that was really on lockdown. Like, there was 14-day quarantine periods if you try to go in and out of it. It was very difficult in terms of it put a massive inconvenience on things. So I think they could play this card, but based on what happened in Orlando, I think that's something – it's really the card of last resort if necessary.
It will be interesting to see. I'm really hoping that that the season continues without a hiccup, and there's no type of pause here, let alone as we get closer to the playoffs. I think it would be wise to have some type of bubble, because once we get into the playoffs, obviously you don't want to have any type of risk of any players coming down with COVID-19, which, by the way, the latest is that Cam Newton is the lone Patriots player to test positive as of right now for the Patriots. That game is set to happen on Monday, could possibly be moved to Tuesday, depending off more tests are revealed, more positive tests are revealed. And then there's also the chance that it could be moved to a different week. So you want to stay tuned for that. As we know, Tennessee and the Steelers, that game has been postponed to week 7. As Mike Tannenbaum reported when he first joined the show at the top of the hour, and that is that the Saints fullback, Burton, had a false positive, right? I keep on getting it screwed up, Mike. At the end of the day, negative for the Saints players. So it looks like the Saints and the Lions game is going to take place. Some other top storylines. Let's talk about Nick Foles and the Bears. Now, Nick Foles now is a starting quarterback for the Bears. I'm excited for him. I mean, we've been able to see what Nick Foles has been able to do in his career when he does come in as a backup quarterback. Heck, you know, he helped the Eagles win the Super Bowl. I think this is the right choice. What are your thoughts on the Bears moving forward?
Anita, I think they were just 3 weeks too late. It was a no-brainer. Nick Foles just gives them a better chance to win. Mitch Trubisky's yards per pass attempt, and again, for our listeners, that to me is one of the most important indices for a quarterback, because if you can't get the ball down the field's compressed. And Mitch Trubisky consistently has shown he can't do that. So Foles came in, got really hot, came back, had an epic comeback against the Falcons. He's earned the right to win, to start. And this is a team that's dangerous because they can rush the passer. They have some number of pressure players in their front seven led by Akeem Hicks and obviously Khalil Mack. And they have some skill players that can make plays, you know, led by, I think Anthony Miller is a very underrated player, obviously Allen Robinson. So this is a team that has, I don't think they're as good as 3-0, Anita, but I do think now that they have Foles playing quarterback, they'll be in the playoff mix for the rest of the year.
I'm a big Nick Foles fan. You've got the Bears at home today going up against the Indianapolis Colts. The Colts defense is sneaky good. I don't think people realize just how good their defense is. But they are dealing with some injuries. Michael Pittman Jr. is out now. So we should get a heavy dose of Zach Pascal and T.Y. Hilton. T.Y. Hilton hasn't had the season I think that we were all expecting him to have. How do you see this game being played out today in Chicago?
Yeah, you nailed it. I think this is, you know, the Colt defense, you know, they have good speed, which is going to be necessary because, again, Chicago has some underrated speed on the perimeter. When we go to the other side of the ball, what I think is interesting is there's an emerging player in Mo Alie-Cox, a tight end for the Colts, who's having a decent year, has 181 receiving yards already. And, you know, Jonathan Taylor is going to keep coming along. I think Jonathan Taylor is really I thought he was a great pick when it happened. And, you know, since they already lost Marlon Mack for the year, this is a player that they're really going to count on. And I think Phillip Rivers is actually a guy that can either help them or possibly hurt them because he is prone to those turnovers. He already has 3 interceptions this year. That was the big bugaboo last year with the Chargers. And this should be a good game. And I'm really curious to see this Colt defense, which I agree, as you stated, Anita, I think they're underrated. I'm curious to see how they do against that Bear offense led by Foles.
Another game that's going to be interesting today. I like the Jacksonville Jaguars. I've got the Jacksonville Jaguars on the money line, and you could get that at +120. But they're taking on Cincinnati. And, you know, obviously Joe Burrow has just been fantastic and definitely leading the charge in regards to the Offensive Rookie of the Year. Going up against a Jaguars team. Keep in mind, apparently reports are that Joe Mixon is dealing with an injury right now, so you want to stay on top of that, especially if you have Mixon in fantasy. But your thoughts on Joe Burrow the first 3 weeks of the season in what you've seen so far. Has he exceeded expectation for you, Mike?
Yeah, I like him. You know, I liked him coming out. I saw him play in person against Georgia, and he was really much more athletic than people realize. He can make plays with his feet, and that's already shown up. What I'm really concerned about is all these hits that he's taking. I don't like the fact that they're throwing it 50, 55, 60 times a game, because that's a below average offensive line. And we could go back to people like David Carr, top pick, and his career was over before it started because he got hit so much in Houston. And Joe Burrow, I think his frame will fill out over time. But if you look from behind at guys like Ben Roethlisberger, Cam Newton, Tom Brady, they're bigger men like Goff and Wentz. Joe Burrow isn't that big. It's going to take him a couple of years for him to grow into his body, off-season programs, get stronger from – and Coach Parcells always talked about this. What do they look like from the waist down, you know, quads and hamstrings, just from a standpoint, are they sturdy and built to last? Joe Burrow right now is not built to last, so – that would be a massive concern I would have if I was Cincinnati.
I know one of your biggest storylines is how the NFC East is going to play out. We touched on it a little bit earlier in our first hour. But, you know, based on the games today, Dallas at home against Cleveland, later on tonight, Sunday night, Philadelphia in San Francisco, Washington, Dwayne Haskins not playing well. Ron Rivera apparently had a come to Jesus meeting with him earlier this week. What's the one game that you are eyeing the most? For me, it's Dallas and Cleveland. But what's the one game that you think is going to be key in how this all plays out and where the standings will be Monday morning?
I agree, Anita, because I think Cleveland's going to be able to score against that Dallas defense. And I think that's going to be a really high scoring game. So what's interesting, again, is when you look at that NFC East, like, to me, that's the story of the day, because can Dallas outscore Cleveland? Because Cleveland's going to be able to run it and throw it. And then Philadelphia and San Francisco, you know, both teams are banged up, but if Jason Peters is out now, like, that offensive line, Anita, is decimated. And look, I know the 49ers are missing Nick Bosa and Solomon Thomas, but boy, when you start losing 3 and 4 starters on an offensive line, that's really, really hard for Philadelphia. And we could say that Carson Wentz hasn't played well, but when you start thinking about all the players they're missing, you know, from Brooks, you know, and now if Jason Peters is out, Lane Johnson missed time already this season. That should be a big, big concern if I'm the Philadelphia Eagles.
By the way, you're listening to Chalk Talk, brought to you by FW Webb and Wheel McLean, 800-919-3776. We've got some calls we're going to get to, Mike, but really quick, I just want to give folks an update, especially those playing fantasy football. Christian Kirk, ankle expected to play in week 4, which is good for me because one of my favorite bets is is the Arizona Cardinals -3 against Carolina. DeAndre Hopkins as well, ankle is set to play against Carolina. So it looks like Kyler Murray will have both Kirk and Hopkins today. Chris Carson, knee, expected to play against the Dolphins. So if you went out and you picked up Carlos Hyde, might have some reservations in regard to starting him this week because Chris Carson looks like he's going to get the start and will play. We heard Pete Carroll earlier this week say that Carson had a good week of practice. Kareem Hunt dealing with a groin, expected to play against Dallas, but I'd be a little weary of that. He might be on a pitch count, and of course, you know, you've got Nick Chubb back there. Cam Newton, like I said earlier, unlikely to play in week 5. If this game does take place on Monday or Tuesday, he's the only player right now to test positive on the Patriots in regard to COVID-19. And I think that is it in regard to some updates with players. All right, let's go to your phone lines. Again, 800-919-3776. Let's go to Matt in Oceanside. Matt, welcome in.
Hey, Anita, how are you? I was calling.
Good morning.
I know you had you followed the Ravens or you worked with them. I'm not really sure, but I just want a prediction what's going to happen in that Baltimore-Washington game. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, Mike. Listen, how can Baltimore not be absolutely just so ticked off and so embarrassed? And Matt, thank you for the phone call, and thanks for holding on. I know you were holding on for a while to get that question, and appreciate you. You know, How can Baltimore not be just absolutely coming in with a chip on their shoulder? It's just a complete embarrassment in how they lost to the Kansas City Chiefs. I think they take all that aggression and all that anger out on Washington today. I think this is going to be a butt whipping. Curious to get your thoughts on how you think this is going to play out.
Yeah, and just to take that a step further, when you look at the passing attack of Washington against that Raven defense, Haskins has struggled. He's only completing 56% of his passes. He has three interceptions. You're going against a defense that maybe outside of New England, in my opinion, may have the second best secondary. When you look at, you know, the veteran Jimmy Smith, Marcus Peters, Marlon Humphrey, who may be one of the best corners in the league, that's a really good secondary. So I think Washington is going to struggle in terms of being able to move the ball consistently against that Ravens secondary. And then on the other side of the ball, when you look at it, I really like the front seven of Washington, you know, one of the best in the league. But when you're playing an opponent like the Ravens, who you don't see very often, that's a very difficult opponent to prepare for. So Kansas City obviously has seen them a number of times, but I think Baltimore is outstanding, and I like them as well this week against Washington.
Yeah, listen, I had the Baltimore Ravens going 16-0 at 25-1. I got them early on in the season. So obviously that bet is out the window. So Mama did not get a new pair of shoes, Mike, for that bet. That's for sure. The way that Kansas City and Ravens game panned out, I think it was a series of horrible events that took place for the Ravens, right? Like they went in thinking, you know, Kansas City, they've got one of the worst rushing defenses in the NFL, and you've got to give credit to Steve Spagnuolo, who came in and really put together a great defensive game plan. The Ravens were not able to run the ball outside of Lamar Jackson. Defense was on the field way too much. They kept on blitzing Patrick Mahomes, which I didn't understand. They didn't make any changes at the half. I was really so, and with all due respect to Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City, I just don't feel that the best team won that game. The team that played the best that day won that game. I still think the Ravens are the best team in the NFL. I think it's unfortunate the way that they lost. I'm sure you disagree with me, but man, if that's an AFC championship rematch, I'd pay $1,000 to watch that on pay-per-view, Mike.
Well, so you're going to have no shoes and you'll be at $1,000. This is not a good week for the state of the economics.
Oh, I opened that door and you walked right through it.
Boy, I hope you don't lose a lot of balls, you know, next time you play, because, you know, to go order another case of those Pro V1s is not going to be salary cap friendly for you. So
you're so funny.
I Kansas City is a better team. Last couple times they played, they've proved that. And I think for a couple of reasons. When you play man-to-man defense, Anita, and your back is turned to the line of scrimmage, Patrick Mahomes can beat you with his feet, which is a very underrated aspect of his game. And on the other side of the ball, I agree. Steve Spagnuolo did a great job. They contained the run. They set the edge. They pressed the pocket. Chris Jones made some plays. And in my opinion, if Baltimore has a vulnerability, they're going to need guys like Marquise Brown, last year's number one pick from the University of Oklahoma, to step up and make plays down the field to stretch a defense. And Mark Andrews, the tight end, didn't play well from Oklahoma, third-round pick of a year ago. So I think when you look at Baltimore and Kansas City is just a better team.
800-919-3776. Let's go to Sal. Sal, welcome in.
Anita, thank you. Mike, thank you. Anita, I got a question for you. I missed the first week going up to make the same bet you did, but I wanted Kansas City to go 16-0. And I had my wife stroll on the thing where she was looking at, and she couldn't find it. I mean, after the first week, do they take it out and you can't take that bet no more, or they just lower the odds?
What, you're talking about the Ravens 16-0? Oh, any 16-0 bet? Yeah, I mean, listen, each and every week, you know, there's certain bets that are on the table, off the table, on the table. So that's why you've got to constantly go online and check and see what's being offered. You know, right now, last I checked, there's not a specific team that has odds to go 16-0. It's just will a NFL team go 16-0 this season? And I want to say those odds, last I checked, I think were like 15-1 that a team will go 16-0. So you just have to constantly, whether it's, you know, whatever, BetMGM, DraftKings, whatever, you know, wherever you wager. Good thing you live in Jersey. Can you believe it? Mike, can you believe you still can't wager in New York? like if I'm in New York on a Saturday night, let's just say, hypothetically speaking, I'm in New York on a Saturday night, and on Sunday, I want to watch football in New York with friends in New York. I have to pay $16 to come, you know, over a bridge or through a tunnel to come back to New Jersey to put my bets in, and then go back into New York. Stop being 2000 and late. Like every state should legalize gambling. It's the most ridiculous thing, I tell you.
Yeah, and you know what's going to change that? Two words: tax revenue. You know, when all these cities and states are looking for new forms of tax revenue, I bet you within a year from now, when we're having this conversation, things will look differently.
800-919-3776. Let's go to Emmanuel in Flushing. Emmanuel, welcome in.
Good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Good morning.
Good morning. Listen, Anita, let me ask you this. I know both teams in the New York area have been so dysfunctional, but if you have to choose, which team do you still have faith in the future, the Jets or the Giants?
Ooh, that's a great question, Emmanuel. Thank you. You know, he's talking about the future, Mike. And so here's, I'm going to tee this up for you. Okay. I'm going to answer as well, Emmanuel, but I'm really curious to get Mike's response. I'm a huge fan of Joe Douglas. I mean, I spent 4 years in Baltimore. To me, Ozzie Newsome does no wrong. He comes from that Ozzie Newsome, Eric DaCosta tree. So I think the future is a lot more bright in regard to GM. I love all the draft picks that he is compiling. I think that he's going to have some really exciting cap space available. So future-wise, I really like what Joe D can do for the Giants. I'm not sold on Adam Gase. I've got some big question marks in regard to Adam Gase. I don't know if Adam Gase is the answer at the head coaching position here for the Jets. As for the Giants, I like Dave Gettleman. He's really a funny, quirky, kind of nice guy. I just think he's very old school. I don't think he's up to the times. You know, football has changed immensely, and I feel that he's drafting for the old school football, not for the new school football. But I am sold on Joe Judge, and I think Joe Judge has compiled a phenomenal coaching staff. So it's very interesting. So if I could combine Joe Douglas with Joe Judge, winner, winner, chicken dinner. Like, I think that would be the best combination. But obviously, I think with both organizations, there's a negative on each side. One with a general manager, the other one with a head coach. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I see it similar from a standpoint that, you know, right now you would just say, based on all those draft choices that the Jets amassed a lot from that Jamal Adams trade, you got to like how they're positioned. Now, one word of caution on that is, you know, Seattle looks really good, so if that was the 10th pick in the draft, that looks a lot better than if it's the 30th pick in the draft. But, you know, right now the Jets are well positioned for the future.
No.
And, you know, I think Sam Darnold and Daniel Jones are both grades of incomplete. Like, it wouldn't be crazy if we were sitting here in 2 years and both teams had, you know, new quarterbacks. So, you know, I think there's lots of uncertainty. Hopefully both those quarterbacks develop. But to me, it just starts up front. If both those offensive lines and, you know, Andrew Thomas, first round pick, Mekhi Becton, first round pick. If they start playing, and I think both of them were really good picks, but if that could help pick up the play of their lines overall, that'll go a long way. But there's still a lot of uncertainty right now with both of those quarterbacks.
I'm with you. And we're going to dive into the Jets and their future and the potential, the possibility of them getting the number one overall pick, and what Mike thinks the organization should do if they have the chance to draft Trevor Lawrence. We'll dive into that, and we'll continue with your calls. So, Eddie, Ira, Tom, hang tight. Also, hour three, really excited. Serena Morales is going to join us. Good friend of mine, worked with her at ESPN. Mike, you remember her. We used to have some fun with her in the makeup room. Always fun, always cheerful, always exciting to work with. Now she's out on the left coast, and she's part of the Rams broadcast team and has been for the past 2 years. So we'll get a Rams update. You know, the Giants are getting ready to take them on later on this afternoon.
Now back to New York Game Day with Chris Canty, Mike Tannenbaum, and Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN. Now back to New York Game Day with Chris Canty, Mike Tannenbaum, and Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Welcome back. back. It is hour three here on 98.7 ESPN. Mike Tannenbaum, Anita Marks, no Chris Canty this week. He'll be back with us next week. But really excited to take you out to the left coast. Serena Morales, good friend of mine. Girl, I miss you, man. Used to be with us at ESPN. I know. Used to be with us at ESPN and now out on the left coast, living large, loving life, and working for the Rams, which, of course, our Giants will face the Rams today. So first and foremost, Serena, let's talk about Jared Goff and the season that he's having. Love the way that Sean McVay has really put together an offense that is allowing him to really thrive and succeed. A 1.35 QB rating in play action, using a lot of 12-man personnel. Talk about the season that Goff has had so far.
Yeah, I mean, Sean McVay says that Jared Goff is playing better than he's ever seen. Clearly, even with the loss against the Bills last week, Jared Goff, Sean McVay, and Cooper Kupp, his wide receiver, one of his favorite wide receivers, said that was his best game of the season. And I think there's a couple things that go into that. One, you've got, again, additional help with Kevin O'Connell, new offensive coordinator, has done a great job with Jared so far. Really, just, again, his maturity growing, there's support there. Sean McVay has the ability to then look at the entire team versus focus on the offense, which you know that Sean McVay does so well already. But now you've got extra support. So that's one thing. The other thing, I think there's just the offensive line that we didn't see last year, right? Andrew Whitworth said last season, yes, with a dinged up O-line, Jared Goff's going to have to play differently. But now you've got extra support with Kevin O'Connell. You've got Sean McVay kind of seeing the bigger picture. And the offensive line that was dinged up last year, again, Andrew Whitworth said, hey, those guys now got big game, play. So when you go into a game like this season and you're going in and you're getting experience, big game experience, I should say, and you're getting all of that experience, now you've got no rookies coming in. You've got Austin Blythe, who's a veteran. You've got Andrew Whitworth, who's a veteran. You've got Rob Havenstein, who's back from an injury, who's a veteran. So really you're filling in those gaps now. Joe Noteboom, who's out with an injury now, will be filled in with David Edwards, who, again, a rookie that we got who's ready to play because he had some experience last year. So Jared Goff has a lot of support going around him. And I think a lot of people are talking, oh, yeah, the Rams run game, that's the new identity. But it's not. Jared Goff is passing just under 300 yards per game. So I would say there's a mix of it, and it's not necessarily, yeah, the Rams are just running amok and running the ball, and they're doing a great job with a guy like Daryl Henderson and a mix of Malcolm Brown, who scored two first downs for the Rams just the first game of the season. With Cam Akers out, you're going to see probably more Daryl Henderson and Malcolm Brown again. But I think overall, when you're looking at Jared Goff specifically, you can't just look at the one guy at QB1. You've kind of got to look at the bigger picture with this offense.
Yeah, wow. There's Mike? A lot there. One thing I want to touch on is Kevin O'Connell, because you brought it up earlier. When I was at the Jets, Kevin was on and off our roster a number of times, and I remember Rex Ryan talking about when they were designing blitzes, he would have Kevin O'Connell work with the defensive coaches because he was so good at understanding protections, how to defeat them. And I just remember working with Rex over the years. He thought Kevin was the smartest player he had ever coached, which is, you know, saying a lot given Rex's experience as both a head coach and a coordinator. So no surprise that Kevin O'Connell is making a difference there. I guess my question is, looking how good they've played up front and specifically in the run game, do you think that's going to be sustainable over 16 games?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of questions of what's sustainable over 16 games, as we've seen a couple other teams are not able to sustain health in other ways. So I do think that Sean McVay, with you know, our head guy, Reggie Scott, who's kind of making sure that physically these guys get rest days, that mentally we've got one of the best team psychiatrists to make sure that, again, this season is unlike any other. So the mental and physical aspects are being taken care of. But, yeah, I mean, Sean McVay's not someone that takes risks with guys' bodies. Again, Cam Akers not playing. He's out this game with a rib injury. But, you know, he does give, like when Malcolm Brown, he actually fractured his pinky in week two, and he was able to play. But he did have a rest day because he had so many reps during the game against the Bills. So, like, there are times where they will rest these guys, for your point, to have sustainability throughout 16 weeks.
Again, Serena Morales joining us here on 98.7 ESPN, part of the Rams broadcast team. You know me in fantasy, Serena. So I was hearing such great things about Cam Akers during camp. And so, of course, you know, I have him rostered on a few of my fantasy teams. I know that he's injured right now, and we're getting a heavy dose of Henderson, and Henderson has been over-delivering. I mean, he's just been sensational the past two games. But let's talk about this backfield. A two-part question. Number one, what do you expect from Henderson against this Giants defense today? And B, once Cam Akers gets healthy, for folks who do have him in fantasy, what do you recommend they do with him?
Okay, yeah. So, to make sure that Anita's good with her fantasy team this week, I do think Daryl Henderson, gotta look out for Anita. I think that there will be a mix again of Daryl Henderson. Look, Sean McVay's not going to stop a guy who's hot, right? Why would take him out if he's doing well? So I do think that Daryl Henderson, and what's actually interesting that I noted about Sean McVay and his coaching staff this week, is it actually doesn't matter who starts in the game. Like, we started Cam Akers in the first game of the season. Everyone's like, oh my gosh, Cam Akers is starting over Malcolm Brown, the vet running back in this group. And then Malcolm Brown ended up scoring two touchdowns in the game. So he's trying to actually get these younger guys reps, put them in early, get them some experience. So Sean McVay thinks very highly of Daryl Henderson. I mean, that kid can block, run, and receive the ball really well. I see if he's keeping, you know, going, then put the coal under him and let him rip. Cam Akers is expected to come back at some point. Again, I think they're just being safe with him. He's a rookie. He's highly touted. And you don't want to risk injury with someone like that, especially when you have a guy like Daryl Henderson. And again, Malcolm Brown, who can jump in and jump out at any time. And he's sort of that reliable, steady veteran presence in this running back group. Overall, I would say this against the Giants secondary, you would actually, if you're a fantasy football person, I would look to Cooper Kupp, who's one of the best third and fourth down receivers in the league. That is Jared Goff's favorite person to throw to. And if you look at the Giants secondary, which again is kind of dinged up, I would look for him. I think their last place for stopping third down conversion, look for a guy like Cooper Kupp this week to really get you some points.
Serena, going to the other side of the ball, you know, when you put a team together the way the Rams have, where so much of the money is going to too few of the players, and everyone knows about Aaron Donald, everyone knows about Jalen Ramsey, who are the third or fourth, in your opinion, best defensive players for the Rams?
Best defensive players for the Rams. I mean, John Johnson, safety, he actually plays a little bit of linebacker, a little bit of safety, depending on who's the defensive coordinator. But under Brandon Staley, he's made this defense very dynamic. But John Johnson, I believe, has been underrated since he entered the league. Out of Boston College, he had an injury last year, shoulder injury, which kept him out the entirety of last year. But that being said, this season he's come in, he's watched, again, you had Eric Weddle last season playing, who he was able to watch and get mentorship from him off the field. He attended all those meetings, and now he's wearing the green dot under Brandon Staley's defense. He's a captain on the team now. I think he's so underrated. He actually feels very comfortable and excited. He told me this week, he was just like, you know what, Serena, at first, because I'm like, do you want to wear the green dot? Do you want to have that extra responsibility? And he's like, you know, at first you're like, nah, I don't want that. And then he was just like, no, Brandon Staley's exciting. You know, you got Jalen Ramsey, you got Aaron Donald. I want to step up. I want to be there and be part of this defense. Had an interception just last week against the Bills. He held on to that ball so hard. He was telling the ref, he was like, nope, I got it. So I definitely see John Johnson being a big name that we're just not really looking at. And I think old steady, you know, Michael Brockers has really created, you know, a better game for Aaron Donald. When you look at Aaron Donald, you really have to look at Michael Brockers as well, who's sort of that, you know, best supporting cast role, because, you know, without him, AD doesn't get the help that he gets. And obviously Aaron Donald opens up the game for everyone else on the defense. That being said, Michael Brockers is sort of that, like, I don't have to worry about everything because my buddy Brockers is in the game.
Again, Serena Morales joining us here on 98.7 ESPN for New York Game Day, getting you ready for that Giants-Rams matchup. talk about Ramsey for a minute, right? Like, gets a bad rap in Jacksonville, wants out, goes to the Rams. He's having a sensational season. In fact, I think he's going to be a really big key to the Rams winning today and shutting down Darius Slayton, who's had a great season so far and good chemistry with Daniel Jones. Your thoughts? I know you cover this team, and you know, I see your videos a lot, and you do a great job with a number of these players, and I'm sure you've gotten to know Ramsey pretty well. Kind of give us some insight on him and what your expectations are in that matchup this afternoon.
Jalen Ramsey is comfortable. He is confident. There is no one that really will rattle him, because he will already be rattling you before you open your mouth. He is a talker. He gets in people's head. And why does he do that? Because he is so comfortable with himself that he can just go and bother everybody else now, right? He's not talking to himself in this game. He's talking to the other wideouts that he's playing. Since joining the Rams out of Jacksonville, he has told me this is the place he wants to be. Even just this season, before that big contract was signed, he had donated or promised to donate $1 million to a school back in Tennessee, in Nashville, Tennessee, in his hometown, because he was focusing on other things to make sure that he does his part off the field. In this defense specifically, he is the leader in that secondary, along with John Johnson. I would say between him and Aaron Donald, they are the big-time playmakers. And when you say playmaker, then you've got to really think about the fact that he is not just a cornerback on this Rams secondary. He is affecting the entire defense, like I mentioned with Aaron Donald just a second ago. They're not going to play him, right? I think he was targeted twice against the Bills. So when you think about how he really affects how the other team is throwing the ball, that's a playmaker, right? He's going to affect how everything is going. And to your point before about, you know, other guys on defense, it opens up guys for rookie Jordan Fuller, who's questionable for this game. You actually, I don't know if anyone saw Hard Knocks over the offseason, but Juju Hughes, safety who wore ate the toothpick every episode in Hard Knocks, he's actually getting put in the active roster because maybe Jordan Fuller will not play fully. But with that said, I think that Jalen Ramsey as a whole is a confident player. He's very excited and happy to be here. I think he's excited to be challenged. He is a scholar as much as he is a physical player. And so when you think about him as a whole and how he's affecting this defense, not just the secondary, you know, you really need to watch out for him and how he's going to affect every play that goes in against on the offensive side of the ball.
Mike, any questions for Serena before we let her go?
No, that was excellent, Serena. Really appreciate it. And I think you're going to be following a very intriguing team this year. But for the division they're in, I really like them. And a little bit under the radar. But, boy, yeah, that is a tough, tough division they're in.
It's not fair. The NFC West is just too good. It's not fair. Like, any other division, and the Rams would be on the top. But, yeah, they are a really exciting team to watch. And, again, I really do think that the success from this team comes from the fact that Sean McVay is now also, he's learned so much being a head coach now, and you're seeing him refine, you know, like when you've got the chicken broth, like it's good, and now you're adding in the potatoes, you're getting a defensive coordinator like Brandon Staley, you're adding the carrots, you're adding Kevin O'Connell, add a little flavor, adding that substance to the soup, and now you're going to see a really exciting game and season for the Rams.
So, Serena, really quick before I let you go, years ago, Sean McVay was the tight end coach for the Florida Tuskers, who Jay Gruden was the offensive coordinator. And so I was the sideline reporter for the UFL. So I go way back with Sean when he was the tight ends coach and Jay Gruden was the offensive coordinator. So when you see Sean, please let him know I said hello and tell him really thrilled for his success in the NFL. So please let him know I said hi. It's him and I go way back.
I will do that. It's actually amazing because Sean McVay, as you know, has the craziest memory of all time. And he's also just so aware of everything that happens. We're doing interviews with him right now on Zoom. And even in the group of other reporters that are on the call, on mute, my camera was on, and I sneezed a great sneeze. And Sean McVay still stopped and said, "Bless you, Serena." So always woke, that coach.
Serena, you rock. I miss you, girl. So happy for your success out West. Keep it going.
Thank you.
Now back to New York Game Day with Chris Canty, Mike Tannenbaum, and Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN. Anita's three locks of the week.
Anita's three locks of the week. Again, Mike and I are Zooming while we're doing the show. So, Mike, the first dog I held up for you is Sookie. She's 12. She's my youngest girl, and this is my oldest boy, and this is Satchmo. I named him after Louis Armstrong, and he's
nice.
Five.
They're
know.
Beautiful.
You showed one of your boys. I got to show you two of my kids.
How many dogs do you have?
I have five.
You have five dogs?
I have five dogs. My oldest is 20. I have a dog
wow.
who I've never been in a relationship longer than 7 years. I've been with a dog for 20. So, my oldest is 20. My second oldest is 18. So I call them the Golden Girls. They're rat terriers. And then I have three Chihuahuas. And Sookie's my oldest girl. She's 12. And then my two boys are 5 and 4. Satchmo and Frankie. Frankie is all white with big blue eyes. And since I live in Hoboken, I named him after Frank Sinatra. Because
nice.
Frank Sinatra was born. Did you know that? Frank Sinatra was born in Hoboken?
I did know that, actually. So, boy, you have a lot on your plate between golf and fantasy and radio and five dogs. That's a...
No, you have no idea.
You stay busy,
no, I have
huh?
no life. I have no life. But anyway, here's my locks of the week. And I have one dog in my lock of the week. Are you ready? So my favorite play, and you're very familiar with this team, is the Seattle Seahawks and the Miami Dolphins. I like the over here at 54.5. Mike, I think this game goes into like the 60s. You know, Seattle's defense is just god awful. They've already given up almost 1,300 passing yards to opposing quarterbacks the first 3 weeks of the season. Miami plays a lot of man. I think the Hawks wide receivers from DK to Lockett, I think that they've got the advantage there. Fitzpatrick has been Fitz magic. So I think both these quarterbacks are going to go off. This is my favorite bet on the docket, and that's the over at 54.5. Agree or disagree?
Wow. Yeah, that's hard to, especially, you know, like if Byron Jones doesn't play, because I thought that was a really good signing by the Dolphins in the offseason.
He's not playing. Byron Jones is out, and Jamal Adams and Quentin Dunbar are out. FYI.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. I can't disagree. So, I'll double down. Five more dogs.
Whoa.
We got 10 dogs on the bet here. So.
Don't threaten me with a good time. Cardinals, minus 10 dogs in this house. Oh, my gosh. My landlord will kick me out. Cardinals, minus, as if he didn't kick me out already with five. Cardinals, -3 against the Carolina Panthers. A few things here. Number one, Murray tossed three interceptions last week. Let's be honest. We know that's not going to happen again. DeAndre Hopkins, he tweeted last night, he's expected to play. Christian Kirk is expected to play. You know, DeAndre Hopkins accounts for 50% of the team's receptions. That's how unbelievable he is. I think Kenyon Drake goes off on this Carolina Panthers rushing defense. They've already given up 7 rushing touchdowns so far this season. And here's really the big story. And I hid the lead, and not enough people are talking about this, Mike. This Cardinals defense is so much better than last year. They are first in third down percentage allowed to opponents, and they are second in red zone percentage to opponents. So red zones are getting into the red zone. They are not scoring at a rate second fewest in the NFL. So I like the Cardinals defense. And the fact that this is only, I think you're benefiting by it only being 3 because of what we saw last week with these two teams, the Cardinals losing and the Carolina Panthers having a good game. So I'm all over this. I love this Cardinals -3 against Carolina today.
Yeah, I see this one the other way. You know, no Buda Baker going across country. I think Carolina is going to continue to get better. I think there's one of those teams that, you know, new head coach, never done it before. They're really young on defense. I think it'll get better. I believe in Matt Rhule. I'll go with Carolina.
I love Matt Rhule, by the way. You know, Matt Rhule had a cup of coffee with the Giants, and then he got offered the college coaching job. So he was part of the Giants. I don't. Maybe people might not be aware of this. Rhule was part of the Giants staff with Ben McAdoo for just, again, a hot second. And I got to know him pretty well, and I'm a huge fan. He's just such a great guy. Just a really good guy, and I think the future is bright for him in Carolina. I'm thrilled that he got that position, by the way.
Yeah, well, it's well deserved. You know, look what he did at both Temple and Baylor.
Yep, exactly. And last but not least, my dog in the fight today, Jacksonville Jaguars. In fact, you know what? Keep your stinking 2.5 points. I'm going Jacksonville on the money line at +120 against Cincinnati. They've had a lengthy time to move past the horrible performance against the Miami Dolphins in that Thursday night game. So they're playing with extra time. And more importantly, the biggest thing here is Minshew getting DJ Chark back, which I think was he was severely missing against that game against the Miami Dolphins on Thursday night. So I think this is going to be a close game. I'm not sitting here saying that Jacksonville is going to blow him out of the water, but I think at the end of the day, Jacksonville is going to win this. I think we're going to see some more Minshew magic. So I'm taking the Jacksonville Jaguars on the money line at +120. Thoughts?
Yeah, I like it. You know, football is a game of matchups, and I really like Joe Burrow. I like a lot of things that I've seen, except for that offensive line of Cincinnati. So Jacksonville scoring a little bit better than people realize, and defensively, you know, they've been competitive. You know, they did a great job against Phillip Rivers. They did not play well against Miami, but I think they're better than what they showed there. So I like Jacksonville as well. And again, when you look at some of these key injuries, Cincinnati, Geno Atkins is going to be out. Mackenzie Alexander was doubtful. So I think this is a good matchup for Jacksonville. I agree with you.
I always like to look ahead. So just to put a big fat, and I'm going to call it a green bow because we're hoping we're winning people some money, not a red bow and help them losing some money. But so the picks are Seattle, Miami over 54.5, Cardinals -3 against Carolina, and the Jacksonville Jaguars on the money line. Mike agrees with two of the three. He's on the opposite side in regard to Carolina. So I don't know, maybe that's another bottle of wine for me. But I always like to look ahead to week 5. Right now, the Pittsburgh Steelers -7.5 against the Eagles. So now the Eagles will be playing on Sunday night in San Francisco, going to have to travel back and take a rested Pittsburgh Steelers team or coming off of a bye, and I'm only giving up 7.5. And you could, so here's the thing, Mike. I always like to, I look at the lines and I like to jump ahead because that line more than likely is going to go up to 8.5 by kickoff, probably, especially if the Eagles lose this week against the 49ers. So FYI, that is a line that I am jumping on right now heading into week 5. Thoughts on that?
Interesting. Yeah, it's everything's a little quirky right now with teams having rest when you wouldn't think, with Pittsburgh not playing a rugged Tennessee team. So, you know, I think we just got to keep focusing in on that health of the Eagle offensive line. If Peters is going to be out now for several weeks, that's going to hurt them. You know, especially when you think about that, they're on their third left tackle. They had a talented player in Andre Dillard, their first round pick a year ago, who I liked a lot. So in fairness to Philadelphia, they're dealing with multiple injuries there. But yeah, on paper, bad offensive line against a well-rested Pittsburgh Steeler situation. I think that makes a lot of sense. I would like Pittsburgh a lot in that game as well.
All right, let's answer some calls before we head on to our last segment, where we're going to have our predictions for the Giants Rams game, our score prediction. 800-919-3776. Let's go to Dre in Jersey City. Dre, you're up.
Hi, Nita. Hi, Mike. Morning. I wanted to ask you for a fantasy question. Who should I start this week? Gardner Minshew or Matthew Stafford?
Minshew or Stafford? Ryan Fitzpatrick isn't available, Dre?
No, he's not. He's like, my league, it's like everybody snatches up everybody, so it's like real hard to get somebody. But I have Minshew and Stafford right now because I had to drop Wentz. I can't take it with him no more. You know, he's just, it's a headache.
Right. For me, and Dre, thank you for the phone call. Mike, for me, it's a toss up. I like both quarterbacks today. I'm probably leaning towards Stafford, especially because the Saints have so many players, especially two of their top defensive DBs that are out. So I'm leaning more towards Stafford. I like both guys today, but probably I'd give Stafford the nod. Thoughts?
Yeah, I'm with you. I like Stafford a lot today. I think they could be explosive. He was playing at a high level last year, so I think it's a good matchup for them, and I think Stafford has a chance to hopefully start putting a couple of weeks together where we're talking about a resurgent Lion team. And again, if we go back to that play against Detroit, against Chicago, where if DeAndre Swift holds on to the ball, you know, Detroit beat Chicago, and we're, I think that whole NFC North would look a little bit different. So no Lattimore today. Let's go with Stafford.
Let's go to Dempsey in the Bronx. Dempsey, welcome into New York Game Day. What you got?
Good morning, Mike. Good morning, Anita. Quick question about this, the Chiefs-Patriots game that hasn't been rescheduled. I know it's a risk to keep them in your lineup with all this Sunday going on, and I know the Titans game got pushed off to everybody having byes this week. Should I avoid the risk because I have Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Tyreek Hill in my lineup currently? Ooh. I have solid backups options. I have Myles Gaskin, and I have Michael Gallup and Justin Jefferson as my replacement options for Tyreek Hill. Should I just play safe Gaskin and Justin Jefferson or Michael Gallup, or should I ride it out and maybe the Chiefs will play Monday, Tuesday?
So I mean, this is in Dempsey. Thank you for your phone call. I appreciate it. Mike, this is the number one fantasy question right now for me. I'm not confident right now. The game is scheduled for Monday, Kansas City and the Patriots, but anything can happen, right? I mean, there could be more positive tests and this game could be postponed. I don't know. It's so risky for me right now. I'm going to play Ryan Fitzpatrick. I have Patrick Mahomes in one of my leagues. I'm playing Ryan Fitzpatrick over Patrick Mahomes because I'm just worried that Monday night game might be pushed to Tuesday, might be pushed to another week. And then now you're sitting there and you have no quarterback active or attractive on your roster. What would you do? How confident are you? And really quick, because we're up against a break. How confident are you that Kansas City Patriots game is going to be played on Monday or Tuesday, Mike?
Very confident. They're going to fly out tomorrow, apparently, and there's so much at stake for it's a marquee game, and I fully expect this game to get in, barring another unforeseen circumstance.
Okay, so listen, it's up to you. If you want to take the risk, Mike feels pretty confident. It's got to make you feel good. You want to keep in your Patriots, except Cam Newton. Apparently, Cam Newton is not going to play. And your Chiefs players, that's fine. I'm going to play it a little bit more safe with just to make sure that I'm going to have somebody active and hopefully attractive in week 4.